March 28th, 2011, it's the Lullabot Podcast.
Lullabot Podcast.
It's Lullabot Podcast number 93. We get together every so often, every few weeks, maybe a little bit more than every few weeks, every so often, even more often than that. and we talk about Drupal, because it's what we do. I'm Jeff Robbins, and I'm here with the Lullabot team, including...
Angie Byrne.
And...
Jeff Eaton.
And...
Kent Bye.
And...
Karen Stevenson.
And
Jared Ponchot.
As well as
Blake Hall.
And also
Andrew Berry.
Wow, I think this may be the most people we've ever had on a podcast.
Anyone listening to this, you have to imagine all of us just piling out of a tiny little Volkswagen.
but not in clown uniforms, really.
No.
Oh, shoot.
Please.
We weren't supposed to.
Please take us seriously. we'll see how Skype holds up with this many people. Seems to keep dropping people. So we'll see. We're talking about the DrupalCon. We all went to DrupalCon in Chicago.
Yay!
Woo!
And we wanted to do a little DrupalCon wrap-up for people who maybe weren't able to make it to DrupalCon, or if you were and you, like us, were overwhelmed. I know I managed to make it to maybe about, I think, two sessions or three sessions. Mostly I just stayed at the Lullabot booth and talked to people and that kind of a thing. But it's really great chance to, hear what happened there from some other perspectives and that kind of thing. So that's what we're going to do on the podcast. We've done that for a number of years now. So we're doing it again. first, a couple of quick announcements. We're doing the Do It With Drupal conference again this year. It's a conference that Lullabot's been putting on. This will be the third Do It With Drupal conference that we've put on. It's happening October 12th, 13th, and 14th in Brooklyn, New York. this year, we're doing a focus on Drupal as it can and does power future web technologies, such as like mobile and IPTV, that kind of a thing. That's going to be one of the tracks at Do It With Drupal. You can find out more about Do It With Drupal and see a list of the speakers. We've got more speakers that we'll be adding soon. But all of that is at doitwithdrupal.com. And you can get on the mailing list and we'll let you know when new speakers are added and stuff like that. But that's a fun conference that we do and we enjoy. And if you missed DrupalCon, you could make it to Do It With Drupal. It's a little bit more of an intimate conference. We call it a learning conference.
And in addition, its name, the cool kids pronounce it Dude. D-I-W-D.
D-I-W-D. Dude.
Yes.
Dude.
Yes. It helps if you have long hair and like a Metallica shirt.
Yeah. Or a Webchick tour t-shirt.
Indeed. Those were going like hotcakes at DrupalCon.
Yeah. The other thing is Drupalize Me. We're still running Drupalize Me. We will for the foreseeable future. Drupalize.me is a subscription-based video training website with access to all of the Lullabot Learning Series videos that we've ever put out, all of our DVDs, and all of the videos from the past Do It With Drupal conferences. And we've got new videos being released every month and several new features that are going to get rolled out soon. There's also a blog there. There's also a mailing list there. Drupalize.me is where you can find out more about that.
Me!
Me! You! Go Drupalize yourself! I was making new little bumpers for Kent's. So Kent does another podcast. So we have two podcasts. We have this that we call the Lullabot Drupal podcast. This podcast that we've been doing for almost 5 years now, probably actually over 5 years now. And then Kent, was it about 2 years ago?
Yep.
You started doing
DC.
Yeah, we started doing another podcast called Drupal Voices. This is a big podcast. We just get everybody on and just talk until we're talked out, and it takes an hour or so. And Kent wanted to do something a little more focused, and rightly so. And so that's called Drupal Voices, and those are like short interviews with people doing work in the Drupal community. Anyways, we have little bumpers at the beginning of there, you know, tell people about what we're doing. And we made stickers for DrupalCon that said, go Drupalize yourself. But I, you know, it's a little edgy. You go Drupalize yourself. But I put a comma in there in the bumper. Go Drupalize yourself. And then it's not quite so rude. It's good stuff. All right, that's enough of me talking. Let's talk about DrupalCon. How'd you guys enjoy it?
It was pretty amazing.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
Great. So that's the podcast. Thanks, everybody.
No, I mean, it was every year saying, wow, DrupalCon was huge this year. It's just sort of becoming a cliche. I mean, I think in like 2007, you know, DrupalCon Sunnyvale had like 350 people total, and like I remember everyone there saying, "Man, this is just getting huge." So, you know,
and wasn't just DrupalCon; that was something else too.
Yeah, I mean, and there were even other CMSs represented there. So, like today, I mean, like this DrupalCon, I think we had that many people in one of the small conference rooms, and I think it's just really. It's really becoming obvious that like DrupalCon is turning into like it feels more like a small industry event than a coder and developer and site builder get together. And I mean, I think people have been talking about that for a while and they've been seeing it happen, but I think this year the organizers really just embraced that and went to a lot and put a lot of work into making sure that there were tracks for people who were coming for an industry event, and there were tracks for people who were coming for like the old school kind of experience, which is like, you know, 100 people in a conference room arguing about, you know, a particular API or something. And I think the attention that they put into like really having both of those things going in parallel really paid off.
So, Jeff, do you think Drupal is now an industry amongst itself compared to like the rest of the web development world?
I mean, it's a small industry compared to like, you know, say the .NET world or something like that, obviously.
Did we get a total on the number of people at the conference?
It was about 3,000 people. I can't remember the exact headcount.
Yeah, it was just about 3,000. I think that's pretty close.
Which is about the same as we had in San Francisco. However, I think there are a lot more local tech people in San Francisco than in Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the feeling was San Francisco had a much larger mix of sort of drive-by people who were evaluating it or were there because it was tech related. And this was just, it was Drupal. I mean, I didn't meet anyone there who wasn't there because they knew enough about Drupal that they wanted to dig in.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the trade show room, is that what we're calling it? The expo room where all the sponsors were. I mean, it felt much more like a real conference. I mean, there were rows and rows of sponsors.
With booths, real booths.
And everyone had sort of figured out how to set up their booths. It's taken a number of years for people to kind of find the Kinko's banner printing service and figure out how to print up a banner for themselves, but everybody's got their banners now, and yeah.
No, I mean, it was really interesting, and I think one big change is that for a long time, Drupal, like DrupalCon, has had like sort of booth setup from Drupal companies as sort of an integrated part of like the hallway that you walk through while getting to sessions. And it was not like that this time.
And they weren't booths, they were just tables.
Yeah, it was, you know, you got a table at DrupalCon and you could sort of hang out while people were, you know, going to and fro. But this time there was like an actual dedicated expo room where all of that stuff happened, and then there was a day stage that, you know, different sponsored presentations from different companies were being given and stuff like that, and there were contests, like there was a module writing contest that, you know, there was a, you know, judging and winners were announced and stuff like that. But those kinds of events were going on in the expo room and the day stage, which is like a lot more like a traditional conference than we've been used to. And I think it probably that room felt more trade showy than we're used to, but I think it also ended up helping the rest of the conference feel more feel a lot more session oriented, because you weren't sort of like running the gauntlet of people selling hosting to you as you walked to and fro.
I thought it was really like nice how they always had some reason for people to go to the expo room for mm-hmm. people who weren't at the conference. Like, it was on the very lowest floor, and so you didn't have to even go near where it was to go to a session unless you were going to the day stage. But every day there would be at least one or two parts of the day where they would have some incentive, whether it was something as simple as like free coffee or whatever, to get people down there and checking things out. So I think that worked out really well for the sponsors.
And there was an arcade. Woo!
Yeah, the Lullabot booth was right next to the arcade, and we got to meet a lot of really wonderful people. Came by the table, and it's really nice to meet people and talk to people. I think on the last podcast we did, we said, please come by our table and introduce yourselves. And a lot of people did. And it was really, it was just as great as I'd hoped.
You know, one thing that's really struck me about this is those of us who've been in Drupal for a long time, we kind of remember, you know, the old days of DrupalCon when it was a little smaller and more intimate. And we kind of miss that as it's gotten bigger and bigger. And I thought that a genius idea was having everybody in the same hotel.
Yeah.
Because that gave us a lot of that back.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the other thing that did that for me as well was having the core conversations run the length of the conference as sort of a separate track rather than just a single day event or sort of happening in conjunction with the sprints at the end of the conference.
So Blake, like for the people who weren't there, what are the core conversations?
The core conversations were basically just a separate room to sort of hash out future directions and kind of initiatives with Drupal 8 and kind of Drupal going forward. I think, Jeff, you hosted one on the project formerly known as Tsunami.
Now known as Snowman.
Snowman. And Larry Garfield did another one on Butler that was actually really interesting. But it sort of, I think the room maybe held 80 to 90 people. So it kind of brought back that small conference vibe for the folks that are really involved in Drupal development.
Yeah, and I think it also really helped, like, making sure that people who were just sort of evaluating Drupal didn't accidentally sort of wander into a room and find themselves inside of a heated discussion about whether or not like Drupal 9 should store the node object as a serialized array or something like that. I mean, you know, I think it really helped clarify what the not just experience level, but engagement level was for different kinds of sessions.
And again, I think that was part of what it made it feel a little bit more of that intimate quality that mm-hmm. we haven't had in some of the other big ones is you could go into that room, you know, throughout the conference and find other people working on core.
Yeah.
Well, by contrast, I mean, the example I always use is Barcelona, where we had a donated space, but it only was available till 5 p.m. And then they literally had security people come and push people out. I think it might have been the communication barrier, but pushing is a universal language. Push, we're pushing you out. How do you say get out of here in Spanish?
Actually, I think we had that in the big conference halls, too, in Boston and some of the other places.
Yeah,
we had to be out by 6 or whatever.
Well, but in Barcelona in particular, I mean, then you were kind of pushed into the city, and there weren't spaces.
There was nowhere to go.
There were, like, restaurants where, you know, all these teeny little restaurants couldn't seat more than 12 people. You couldn't even, like, find a place. So it was just very disjointed and, you know, you'd sort of be walking through the back alleys of Barcelona and you'd run into, you know.
We found some great crepe places, but, you know, it was hard keeping in touch with all the people at the conference.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but you'd run into people in the alleys, you know. It's like, hey, I know you. You created that module I use. And so,
yes, you know where to get dinner.
Yeah, so this is much more cohesive. I mean, it's certainly the kind of thing that we've been trying to do with Drupal all along, was sort of have it all in one place and keep people, you know, focused. And it was really nice that you could go down to the bar, you know, after everything was done at 11 o'clock at night, and there would be...
There would be 200 other Drupal people down in the bar with their laptops open programming.
Maybe that wasn't nice. I don't know.
No, it was. I mean, there was something about just being able to hang out in the lobby and, like, just constantly see people that you know and constantly see people that, you know, like, we were playing poker or whatever we were doing. You know what I mean? Just, like, stuff like that. It was just, like, really fun.
I will say this, though. It was really interesting because I stayed a day later than most of the Lullabots. So the day all of the Drupal people left... And all of the people who were staying in the hotel because they wanted to come and party for St. Patrick's Day, the day that changeover shifted, wow, the makeup of the lobby started looking really different.
Actually, before the Drupal people came, it was the same way because we got there a couple days ahead. And I was down there that Sunday before, early in the morning, like 7 o'clock in the morning. And there's all these people in suits walking around at 7 o'clock on a Sunday morning. I guarantee we did not see that during DrupalCon.
For people who haven't been to a Drupal conference before, you don't see a whole lot of people in suits.
Maybe in the expo hall.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of people who own suits.
Okay, yes.
Although I think you do start to see more and more. I certainly saw some. I know that I talked to some people, like a salesman from Akamai I talked to, who actually was doing a lot of, like, security stuff instead of their usual CDN stuff. But there's certainly people there in suits as well. And so, you know, I think... There is sort of a broader audience. There's some people that were coming here, going more towards the business tracks to be able to sell Drupal to their organization, and learn more about that stuff. So it's definitely becoming more diverse.
Yeah, that's a good sort of line of conversation. I mean, we're really seeing, in the same way that the expo hall is feeling much more like a quote-unquote real conference, we're starting to see a lot of stuff that you see at more conventional conferences. Were there actually booth babes this year? There was some
controversy.
Attractive, but possibly knowledgeable women.
Well,
that's always the first step.
Yeah, I think the key again is, I mean, it's a fine line because, like, The traditional problem with the whole concept of booth babes in the technology industry has been, you know, let's just put pretty marketing people or just hired booth people in there in front of all the attendees, and let's dress them in skimpy outfits and make them smile at purchasing people. And that's essentially a model for driving traffic through booths at large technology conferences. And I don't think it would be unfair to say that the Drupal community's reaction to that idea has been, I don't know, poisonous isn't the word, vociferous. We don't tend to like that. Not just because of, like, the inherent, like, sexism that's present in that kind of a setup, but also because the Drupal community just tends to get really annoyed if they walk up to a booth and ask a technical question and the person doesn't even have an answer.
I did notice, though, there's at least one company that did their market research on DrupalCon attendees, because there was, at least that I'm aware of, one free beer giveaway in the expo hall.
They really had
coolers and a tap handing out beer. So that seemed to go over reasonably well.
So I went directly from DrupalCon to South by Southwest I'm actually still not home yet from my DrupalCon trip. I'm actually right now at my in-laws' house in California. But South by Southwest definitely, you know, had all of that. Like, you saw a lot of free beer and a lot of booth babes. And I don't know, it just feels like there's sort of this, like, magnetic pull towards that. And to some extent, I don't know if it's a sign of, like, success or jumping the shark or inevitability or like to call it success doesn't really feel right, but it's sort of like
we're now appealing to a market broad enough that that companies who have a system for doing booths at conferences and that is the system are wanting to come to DrupalCon now, and there is definitely a culture clash that goes on there.
I was just going to say that it's sort of like this theme of maturing Drupal, you know, is maturing in different ways. And I think one big sort of trend within the actual Drupal code end of things is the sort of the proliferation of different types of distributions. You know, some of the big news going into DrupalCon was Development Seed had kind of, in some ways, moving away from Drupal to do more Node.js, but also like mapping stuff. You know, they're more in the open data end of technology, which, you know, they sort of discovered Drupal wasn't as great as for open data. But Phase 2 had taken over all of their projects that DevSeed had developed, all the features, context, boxes, and the Open Atrium and managing news distributions. And so Phase 2 technology, I think, is definitely like a company to look to see what they're going to be doing over the next year with kind of experimenting with what Jeff Walpole said, you know, at least 7 different ways to monetize these different distributions.
Just 7.
Just 7. Well, and it's going to be iterating. There's probably stuff they haven't thought of and stuff that's not going to work. But yeah, they have a full-time like product manager. And so talking to Karen Borchardt was, you know, one of the more interesting interviews I did for Drupal Voices, just to hear what it takes for, you know, a company that's doing Drupal and doing Drupal, you know, distributions and supporting them as products and full-fledged open source products. And what does it mean to have like a product with features that's, you know, completely free and open, but you're still having a business around it. So,
yeah, this is interesting. I mean, this is the first time we've seen one company, Phase 2, take over another company's distribution. So,
The word take over, for somebody who hasn't been following this like saga, I mean, it's not like it was a hostile takeover. It's that Development Seed has been working on a lot of these things for several years and has decided to change directions and work on a different technology stack for some of their upcoming projects. But they also knew that others were depending on the tools they had built over the last 2 years for their own projects. So it was sort of a negotiated transfer because they knew that Phase 2 had a heavy stake in it too. So, I mean, it was a transfer more than a takeover, I think.
I believe it was an acquisition as well. I mean, that there was some money made, which is interesting. I mean, again, you know, open source, free distribution, free software, but there are, you know, trademarks and brand kind of stuff involved with it as well that have some value to them. So, yeah, interesting stuff. Speaking of booth babes, Angie Byron was on the cover of the Linux Journal, which was in all of the bags at DrupalCon. Angie,
yeah, that was crazy.
It's even on store shelves right now.
Yes.
Man. I totally have to go to Chapters and get a picture of me next to it, like making a stupid face.
I logged on to Metafilter, and there were people talking about this person named Angie Byron is on the cover of Linux Journal. I was like, wow, man, this is awesome.
Wow. Yeah.
Good job, Angie.
Thanks. Yeah, that
nicely
was
done.
That was pretty nuts. Like, I didn't know that was going to be, like, I knew it was going to go on the cover, but I didn't know until much later that I was actually going to be on the cover. I thought it was like a little text thing that says Drupal 7 is out or something, you know.
Right.
It was like, yeah, so that was pretty hardcore. Some people came up and asked me to like sign their magazines and stuff like that. So that was really cool. And then another thing that was cool is I got a big standing ovation and some flowers from Dries for like you know, having been the Drupal 7 core maintainer and stuff like that. But it was funny because I didn't know that was going to happen. And right after Dries' keynote was when there was a wedding going on between Melissa Anderson and Michael Halstead, who were like the Melissa Anderson was the Git migration project manager for the later half of it, and kind of the reason that it actually worked. So yay, Melissa! And then Michael Halstead is one of the other volunteers who worked on the project a lot. So they had asked me to come to their wedding in pajamas, and I was like, okay, no problem. But I didn't know I was going to like get up in front of 3,000 people in my pajamas. So I did that. That was pretty fun. But anyway, and that wedding was absolutely amazing.
We had a Drupal wedding.
We totally did. We have evolved, or we've arrived, or whatever the word is. But yeah, weddings have now happened at Drupal. It was actually really sweet, too. Like, I don't know. Kent, you were in the audience, I think.
Yeah, I recorded it. I'll probably play some excerpts, and I did an interview with both Melissa and Michael about it. So we'll probably do Drupal Voices on it sometime in the future.
But it was really sweet. They had a minister there who kind of had them both take, like, so there was like a vessel of like yellow sand and a vessel of green sand, and they both kind of poured half of their sand into kind of a center sort of glass container, kind of like to symbolize that you're both individuals, but there's also an intrinsically connected part of you too, and all this kind of stuff. It was really sweet. Anyway, so it was really great. DrupalCon was just freaking awesome. So
yeah, they were also in their DrupalCon pajamas, and
yes. Yeah.
Seeing as though they both worked on Git, I was slightly disappointed there wasn't any like Git merge jokes or anything.
I was just going to say that. I just was wondering if their vows included trading their UID1 passwords.
Wow. So many missed opportunities, really.
Nothing quite as quotable as that. Yeah, but it was really
excellent. It all started with a pull request.
All right. Well, we could make all sorts of jokes all afternoon, I'm sure. Also in the bag at the DrupalCon swag bag, as it's sometimes called, was the new Drupal Watchdog magazine, which is the first dedicated Drupal magazine published by Jeremy Andrews. At Tag One, that's them, right?
Yep.
And
it is jam packed.
And Dries was on the cover of that one, so we had a magazine with Dries on the cover and a magazine with Angie on the cover. So that was great. What else? What other sort of firsts and announcements at DrupalCon?
Drupal 8 was gold.
Well,
it was branched. It was funny, actually, because Dries announced he was opening Drupal 8 for development at the beginning of DrupalCon, but I don't think he actually knew how to make Drupal 8. So Sam Boyer basically had to help him, and so there was a session at the core conversations, but just before that it happened, and it was cool. It took a couple of times, but they got it, and that was a really neat
moment. It was fun. Had a whole room full of people that cheered after he got done.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about at DrupalCon, the beginning of DrupalCon always starts with Dries' keynote, and that sort of sets the tone for a lot of the DrupalCon, I think, because Dries had kind of announced, you know, Drupal 7 is out, and, you know, but the big news for people at DrupalCon was, you know, what's going to happen in Drupal 8, which for some people new to Drupal may seem kind of weird. You know, Drupal 7 just coming out, but, you know, already talking about developing for Drupal 8. But the core conversations track, I think, throughout the week, we're kind of talking about this new development process that's going to be happening with Git, with having, like, these initiatives. And, you know, he kind of laid out five big projects on the offhand. So doing, like, mobile HTML5 stuff, having more, like, services module integration for, you know, being able to talk to web services. It's a lot of usability, accessibility, performance. And the other two things are the sort of the configuration management stuff with making it easier for deployment and stuff, but also content deployment and content staging. So,
yeah.
Yeah, those were the big tracks for the core conversations, and tried to get interviews for a lot of big people for that, for Drupal Voices as well. So we'll have that at some point.
Cool. So there's the development model for Drupal 8 is going to be a little bit different. Is that correct? Did I sort of...
Theoretically, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, part of what Dries has been talking about over the past probably couple of weeks leading up to DrupalCon is the idea of having initiative leaders rather than just a single co-maintainer, because Drupal's essentially getting large enough, and Angie can probably speak to this with some tangible experiences after having been the co-maintainer for Drupal 7, but Drupal's getting large enough that it's not like one maintainer or even two maintainers can just keep track of everything that's going on and be really up to speed. They always end up having to rely on people who are essentially, you know, carrying the torch for a particular sub-project or something to keep them in the loop. And what Dries has been talking about is having initiative leads who are officially in that position. Like, you know, I think Greg Dunlap Hayrocker talked a lot about the, you know, the problem of, you know, of content staging and deployment and the work he's been doing for the past 2 years and made some proposals for Drupal 8. So, like, he's someone who might be someone who is the initiative leader for fixing content staging and deployment in Drupal 8 if, you know, it were to come together like that. The idea is to have those sort of, you know, subject experts who've developed experience in an area and can really sort of lead that particular kind of, you know, sub project throughout the course of a release, but then have, you know, the overall maintainers who are sort of wrangling that process rather than feeling like they've got to be neck deep in every single patch.
Yeah, I like to think of it as Dries needs to replace me with four people. Ta-da!
Yeah, I mean, well, it's not inaccurate.
Yeah. Good luck putting four people on the cover of the Linux Journal. They won't fit.
Yeah, there's like a lot of stuff that they don't completely know yet how Git is going to evolve and get integrated. And we had a talk with Randy Fay sort of talking about some of the possibilities, but it seems like the lieutenants are going to be more sort of, you know, the owners of a specific, you know, functionality within Drupal. And then Dries wants to do like scrums, like, you know, high bandwidth conversations with those people, like either weekly or biweekly. And then, so what he told me was that if it gets to the point where there's too many of that high bandwidth conversations going on, then he may need like to pull in a full-fledged like co-maintainer to help, you know, keep track of all these big initiatives and mm-hmm. all the other sort of mundane stuff that goes on with being a core maintainer.
Cool.
There was one of the core conversations, I think it was the last one, was Dries and a room full of people kind of talking about how to make this happen. And that was really an interesting conversation about doing things like using Git effectively to maybe set up sandboxes for these things, or, you know, give them issue queues and everything else of their own. A lot of interesting ideas. I don't know how it's going to play out, but you could see how some of these big initiatives would need something like that.
Yeah, I really liked how he's is it 15 critical bugs is what he's viewing as the limit, and if there's any more than that, he won't commit new features. And so I think that's a really interesting idea to try and keep people motivated on keeping our critical bug count down during development.
Yeah, and doing that on an ongoing basis, not just treating it as like a massive pile-on that we have to do close to release, I think is important. Because, I mean, I know like Angie wasn't ever, you know, Angie and Dries, I don't think were ever saying, oh, it's all cool, we can fix those 9 million critical bugs later. But I think it's easy in the community for there to be this mindset of, oh, yeah, well, that's just because, you know, things are in progress. You know, we'll tidy those things up later. And I think that's sort of a historical remnant of how Drupal's past development cycles have gone, when we didn't have automated unit testing, when we were sort of able to just sort of fly by the seat of our pants and keep track of things as we went. And I think it's cool to see those sorts of processes and decisions emerging.
Neat. I wanted to be sure that we got a moment to thank the Palantir.
Oh, my gosh.
Who did a really great job of organizing.
A lot of work, obviously.
Yeah. I did have a couple of people come up to me and say, Palantir is organizing this thing? They were from D.C. They're like a big government contractor. Like, why? I can't believe that they're taking
Palantir.
Over. Not Palantir. Not that Palantir. Palantir.net is a different company than the giant military contractor. So anyways.
This was sort of a military process. But anyway.
Don't confuse it, Karen. Don't confuse it. But yeah, no, certainly a huge undertaking, and they did an excellent job. They also headed up development of an iPhone and Android app for DrupalCon that was super helpful. Had all the schedule on there, the calendar and the maps and stuff like that. I think Jen Simmons did the design for that. Really came out great.
Yeah, and Larry Garfield and Pat Talia, they did it through Titanium. So I talked to Pat about that as well. But it should be able to do JavaScript and CSS and be able to take that and then be able to build native applications in both iPhone and Android. So that was super helpful.
That's where I was going on any given day.
Yeah. It's neat to see that. I mean, I'm just fascinated by mobile around Drupal in general right now. It's nice to see different ways that Drupal can be used, and that being one of them, driving the calendar for the conference. What else? Any other? There were some announcements. We made an announcement just before DrupalCon. We announced that MarthaStewart.com is now a Drupal site that we kind of headed up sort of the architecture and development for that project. And a couple of people on the Lullabot team got to meet Martha at various sort of in the hallways at the Martha Stewart offices. And that's always... It's always fun to have a little star power along with your development stuff.
So Karen, tell us some dirt.
Yeah.
I have no dirt. I know nothing.
You're officially sworn to secrecy, although the muffins were delicious.
Of course. We did get to smell things cooking and watch all kinds of interesting bed design things going on and sewing classes and all kinds of crazy things.
Other announcements. Chapter 3 founders are now working with David Strauss of Four Kitchens. Chapter 3, Four Kitchens, Node 1, Tag 1, Phase 2. We really should have a number in our name to really fit into the Drupal community. But they have a new thing called Pantheon that's been around for a while now, formerly Project Mercury, or I can't keep it. They've had a little branding confusion.
Yeah, Project Mercury was the sort of the free Amazon image that you could do if you were to sort of set up your own Amazon EC2 instance. And the Pantheon is sort of related to that, but it's more of a hosted service.
Got it. So anyways, that's what they're really pushing now. And they got some funding. And so it's neat to see that moving forward. Acquia has had a couple of announcements. What were their announcements? Their dev cloud?
Yeah, I think that was one of their big things.
It's basically like a pre-set up system for people who are building sites with like their cloud stack that allows you to maintain a dev staging QA and live server, and the push between those three happens. Like it's baked in, so it's not necessarily a content staging thing, but for people who need the deployment solution just baked in, they've got an offering for that now, which is actually pretty cool because, I mean, I know with a lot of the clients that we work with, they're large enough that, you know, they've got processes like that in place. And with the smaller, you know, with smaller sites, you know, well, devs do things locally and then things get pushed live and stuff like that. But for that middle ground of like shops that have, you know, companies that have enough on the line if they screw up deploying a new version of the site, but they don't really have the infrastructure in place or they aren't necessarily in a position to be able to set all that stuff up themselves. I think it sounds like it could be really cool.
Yeah, and I should say also Pantheon is pretty similar, actually, for a lot of the you know, trying to implement best practices for people to kind of set up. And for Pantheon, it's going to be free for Drupal developers, and then you basically pay when the site goes live. So for whomever you're developing for, they kind of swipe their credit card at the beginning, but they don't get charged until the site actually is like live and launched. So
nice.
Competition yeah, in Drupal. Dun, dun, yeah. dun.
No, it's coopetition.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
But we're big enough to have competition. That's good, actually.
We'll call it that.
Yeah.
There was a whole bunch of work that went into the Vue's 3 user interface.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that is very cool.
Yeah, related to Drupal Gardens, right?
Well, I mean, it is
in the Vue's 3 now. They've
but
pulled
it's
in
Vue's 3, but developed by Acquia and then
Acquia together with Earl, I think.
With
yeah.
Earl, yeah.
Yeah, and they did a whole there was a whole post that Earl did about it, talking about it. And interestingly enough, they kind of started with a Buzzer inspired project that Jeff Eaton did, which was the Simple Vue's, but then they realized quickly that, you know, if you're going to give people Vue's, you want to give them the full fledged power of Vue's and not sort of water it down. So that's when they started to rehaul it.
Yeah, I think it's been a really interesting thing watching that progress, because like when we were building Buzzer, there was a really specific tipping point that we went through where we had to decide whether we were giving people like cleaner access to Drupal tools or whether we were building specific features with Drupal. And Simple Vue's, the module that I ended up building that Acquia used initially, was definitely an example of giving people very specific features that happened to be built with Vue's. And I think, I mean, but Acquia Gardens model is definitely, you know, more towards giving people a copy of Drupal that they can set up and configure. And there are some additional features that they've built on top of that that are good. But I think they quickly realized that the approach they were wanting to pursue, people didn't need the actual full Vue's toolkit there, and they had to figure out how to provide a cleaner toolkit for actually building Vue's from scratch. So I think they've done some really cool work on that.
I'm just glad we haven't done our Drupalize Me video for Vue's 3 and Drupal 7 yet, because now the user interface has changed, and so we can do a proper video that will be current for that much longer.
For the Vue's nerds in the house, they're one of the really cool things is that it's now going to be possible for modules to implement, like, I wouldn't say wizards, but sort of like template Vue's with configuration screens of their own. So like I think the date module has always done something like this, but it sort of had to roll its own mechanism for it. The ability to say like, I would like to use the build a calendar Vue template or Vue wizard or something like that, and you can go in and make choices about what kind of calendar you want and not have to go in and just configure, you know, a full from scratch view to get all of the different things in place to make those kinds of things work. It's sort of like a middle ground between giving people just a canned pre-built view and telling them go build one yourself.
Oh, come on. Earl's screen name is Merlin of Chaos. Can we please call it a wizard?
Nice. I didn't even think of that.
Yes, we need some gremlins, and I'm trying to go back to all my Tolkien knowledge. I don't have that much. I don't know. Phase 2 technologies, back to phase 2 again, announced an app store for Drupal. What does that mean?
Did a podcast on this.
I know.
Yeah. It wasn't an app store per se, but, you know, in talking to the news, pretty clear as saying that they're not launching this like a web store. They did do a project / apps, APPS. There's no code or issues there yet, but I think they may have demoed it a bit in one of the sessions that they did at the end with Robert Douglas and Jeff Walpole. But essentially what they want to do is take the idea of features and kind of add more user experience so that you know, it just, you can, you know, like you go to your iPhone and download an app and get the functionality, you know, just the same in Drupal, you'd make it more of a one-click type of thing rather than trying to download all the dependencies and kind of piece it together yourself like a, you know, building a Lego set or something. So they're trying to make that easier because they have all these different distributions now, and they see that people want to pay a premium for convenience and user experience of just getting stuff that works. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what kind of evolves around that. But well, I know, Jeff, you looked at that too, or know a little bit more specifically what's going on there.
I mean, it is interesting because, like, the traditional response inside of the Drupal community has been that if you want to pay a premium for, like, convenience, you're wrong. I mean, just, you know, I mean, it's, you know, you should hire someone to do it, or you should learn how to do it, or whatever. But I think this is, again, another one of those things where the community is growing large enough, and the ecosystem and, like, the number of people wanting to use it are starting to reach the critical mass point where there are people who want to use this tool effectively but don't want to become expert craftsmen. Sure. And I think it's very, very interesting.
Yeah, it's really interesting to watch Drupal morph over time. I mean, as I said at the beginning, we've been doing this podcast for 5 years now, and the things that we're talking about now are just a lot different than they were 5 years ago. So
yeah.
So let's start to wrap things up. Maybe, Kent, you want to give us some highlights from the Drupal Voices interviews you did, what people can start looking forward to over the coming months?
Yeah, there's just, like, I talked to Lisa Reicheld about, you know, she's the user experience person they brought in, and she's still involved in Drupal and kind of working on her own free will and thinking about how to redesign the Drupal.org issue queue. So she talked about that a little bit. Talked to someone from Al Jazeera, which was really interesting to hear how Drupal is sort of playing a part in the revolutions that are happening in terms of the Al Jazeera website. And, you know, it seems like Al Jazeera is going to be moving over to Drupal a lot. Accessibility was a big thing as well. Dries had mentioned that accessibility is one of the gates that new features in Drupal 8 have to kind of go through in order to be committed. So talk to Catherine Lynch and Mike Gifford about accessibility stuff. Brian Bindeldorf is a guy from the World Economic Forum who actually was like a kind of internet famous in terms of, like, he was a co-founder of the Apache project and, you know, just been involved in open source and Mozilla and all sorts of different stuff, and even the White House advisor for many years. And so it was really interesting to talk to him and his sort of take on Drupal. And I tried to just sort of take the big initiatives that Dries had laid out for Drupal 8 and talk to as many people as I could about you know, those initiatives, and also get a sense as to, like, the different trends and stuff happening in the community. Talking to Development Seed and having them actually explain what Node.js is and what that means and why they're kind of moving away from Drupal. Also Dave Cole from the White House. So I did 68 different interviews. I only talked to, you know, maybe 3% of all the people at DrupalCon, and anyone, you know, that goes to DrupalCon has their own story. So just try to capture a snippet of stuff that's happening and a sampling, and those will be kind of running for the next, like, I guess 4, 5, 6 months, starting like next week. So yeah.
Yeah, Drupal Voices. How many? 67, did you say?
68, yeah.
68, yes. That's so, yeah, for anyone who hasn't been to DrupalCon before, you see Kent basically hunched over a microphone with his headphones on, talking to people for pretty much the whole conference. So, yeah, we get the great Drupal Voices podcast out of it. So those will be coming up. Cool. Well, I think we touched on most of the stuff that we have in our outline here, and we'll have other podcasts coming up in the future. But I want to thank everybody for coming on the podcast.
It's been awesome.
Yeah.
And plus, we'll... plus.
Subscribe.
We'll see you next time. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.